Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson, and you're with UrbanBuzzMag.com, and I have Bob Maravich on the line with me. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Journal of Gospel Music, which is something I love. We have a radio station, WKPS Radio, where we just play gospel music. It is so good to speak with you today. So Bob, introduce yourself and let people know what's going on.
Thanks, Nigeria. Thank you for having me as a guest. I am Bob Maravich. I am the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Gospel Music. I also have a radio show here in Chicago, Illinois, called Gospel Memories, which is not as long running as Urban Buzz, but almost. We turned 25 years this year.
Okay.
We call it the gospel, kind of the music of the old-time religion, gospel, spiritual, and jubilee music going back. I also am a writer, album notes author, and so kind of pivoting from gospel, I am the curator of the Broadway channels on AccuRadio.
Wow. Now, I want to share something with you because I have never been to Chicago, but I am a house music fan, and I cannot tell you how I appreciate gospel artists of that genre. And we have a Last Friday's gospel house mix that is picking up strong. And I mean, are you familiar with gospel house?
Well, yes. And in fact, little known fact, although you may know it, that Ricky Dillard, before he became the choir master, Ricky Dillard participated on some house music back in the day here in Chicago.
He actually released a house remix not too long ago. Man, the name of the song escapes me. Also, Ricky Dillard, another legend who is also a key player. What's up, Rick? What's going on? We love you. I love what you talked about on the radio and the old gospel, spirituals, the jubilee. You're like a historian. Don't just skip over that. How did you become so interested in gospel music?
Well, I'll tell you, it started in January 1984. I was a junior in college, and I just happened to I was flipping channels on the radio and happened across a radio broadcast from the Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer here in Chicago. Father Hayes was the pastor and founder. And I had always enjoyed black music as a kid, whether it was like Booker T and the MGs or Motown or like some of the groups from Stax and Atlantic. But I never really had listened to gospel until then. And it just occurred to me listening to that broadcast when the choir sang that this was really sort of the foundation of the music I enjoyed growing up. So I just sort of self-taught myself because at that time, I didn't even know what knowledge was out there to absorb.
Right.
So I just, listened, learned, and started collecting some of the records, not many, I had a few.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2001 was when I started Gospel Memories, because now my collection was a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
My knowledge was just a little bit bigger, but I just thought, why should I just enjoy these records by myself? Let me share them. And it just seemed to me that there was nobody really doing the traditional gospel for some of the older folks.
You know,
radio is so geared towards the current demographic, today's demographic, but I felt that the old gospel was being lost. So that was what my show does, and that is what my show still does today. It tries to bring back those memories for the folks who grew up with the music, but you just can't hear it on the radio anymore.
Right. Now, are you a man of faith, or you're just engrossed with the music?
I am what I call a spiritual person.
Okay.
So, yes, I grew up Catholic, but I have fundamental differences with the Catholic tradition and some of the things that they do that I don't believe really is appropriate.
Okay.
I do visit other churches. I enjoy worshiping with other churches. But for me, music is almost the spirituality for me, the messages, the people. I am a person of faith, not necessarily a person of organized religion, but I do participate in organized religion services when invited, and just kind of hope that sometimes the gospel music brings spirituality to some others who may not be in a church.
Right. You affiliated with ASCAP?
You know what? I received the Dean Taylor Award from the ASCAP Foundation this year for an article I did, not on gospel, but on Ted Jarrett, who was a black songwriter back in the 50s and 60s. When Tracy Chapman won the CMA Award, and it was a lot of talk about how, she was the first black songwriter to win the CMA Award, I wanted to make sure everybody knew that in 1955, Ted Jarrett, a black songwriter from Nashville, wrote a number one song for a country singer, Webb Pierce, and that, he sort of was the first to really do something like that.
Right.
So that article won the ASCAP Dean Taylor Award.
Oh, man, congratulations. That's all right.
Thank you.
And let's talk about more awards. You was a Grammy nominee?
Twice, believe it or not, yes, for album notes. Two projects out of the Malico Music Group. The first was sort of like a gospel survey. It was The Gospel According to Malico, which is really taking all of the music that Malico produced or labels it purchased, like Savoy and Air and Apollo, and putting it together in such a way that it could become like an 8-CD introduction. So if somebody said, I know nothing about gospel, but I want to learn about it, you could hand them The Gospel According to Malico. They could read about it. They could listen to it and really get a sense of what gospel is. So that was the first project. And the second one was on the Reverend James Cleveland. That project kind of came out of the first one, in that Tommy Couch Sr., who's the president and founder of Malico Records, we had got to talking when I was working on the first project, The Gospel According to Malico, and talking about Reverend James Cleveland and his influence. And
yes,
we decided, let's put together a compilation and a book on his life, because really not a whole lot of written material is available on Reverend Cleveland. And
right,
so we wanted to do a good job. And so both of those received net Grammy nominations.
Excellent. Bob, I thank you so much for your commitment to making sure that people understand gospel music and its roots and its people. I really appreciate that, because we need that. We need that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So talk about the Journal of Gospel Music.
It was created based on pure guilt. What I mean by that is, I was a member of the Gospel Announcers Guild of the Gospel Music Workshop of America. It's a special division of GMWA that's just for radio announcers, promoters, artists, and so forth. And I was going to our local Chicago chapter meetings because I had gospel memories.
Right.
And artists were coming up to me and giving me their new CD and saying, can you play it on your show? And, well, I didn't do new music. I did old music. So I just came home. I told my wife, I said, I feel so bad. I'm taking these CDs that I can't play them on my show.
Right.
And at that time, she had just set up a blog in global business. And she said, well, why don't you, write about and maybe review those projects, see if there's a blog on gospel. At the time, I didn't see any blogs on gospel. I think there might have been. I just didn't see. So I decided to set it up as a way to review these projects by independent artists. And it just grew from there. I started interviewing artists and then attending things and just kind of getting involved in the gospel music community and sharing the news. And so now it is, 22 years old, I believe now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And you have a video show, a 30-minute video show. Tell us about that, because is that another extension?
It is. It was based on an invitation by Reverend Harold Bailey, who himself was a gospel artist back in the day. He has a studio in his home, and he had produced shows, and he just said, your studio is always available if you want. Well, what happened was, a couple of gospel artists died in a row, and Reverend Bailey and I just said, we got to do something. We cannot just keep losing artists. We've got to interview those who are still with us,
right,
and keep their stories. So I would go and interview artists who were famous in Chicago back in the day, like the Barrett sisters and the Oliver sisters, people like that who made an impact. And thank goodness we did that show, because so many of those artists have now passed on.
Yeah.
We caught their story before they left us.
Amen. That's you know, we're alike in so many ways, because that's what I try to do, is just honor people while they're here. And it saddens me, because it's like people just don't know, you know, they don't know, because mainstream media just pumps you with the same five artists all day. But I digress.
It's very true. In fact, I'll give you an example of one that has slipped by long before I was involved in gospel. There's a woman named Virginia Davis Marshall, and most people won't know her name unless they, you know, are maybe 85, 90 years old, may remember her. But she was a female songwriter, arranger, singer, group organizer, mostly in gospel. Her style was a little bit more, you know, sort of like silk stocking, kind of very refined, and she didn't do a lot of hollering. It wasn't like Pentecostal music, very high energy. It was sort of slow, but she wrote a song that Sam Cooke turned into a pop song. She was so well known in Chicago. People loved this woman.
Mm-hmm.
But then now nobody would know her name from Adam or Eve. And those are the kind of things we hope to avoid, you know, that no more Virginia Davises get away from us.
Right.
We need to tell their stories.
Man. What was the song that she did that Sam Cooke redid?
She had written a song called Wonderful that the Soul Stirrers did. And when Sam Cooke went off on his own, he turned it into Lovable.
Oh,
so he sang Lovable instead of Wonderful. She also is responsible for a song called Jesus, He's My Rock, that a number of people have sung over the years. My Rock, the Swan Silvertones did it. I think the Dixie Hummingbirds did it. I Call Jesus My Rock. Mm-hmm. That song was her composition. And there's actually a church in Chicago that has that thing on the wall of their church, I Call Jesus My Rock, because when she wrote it for that church and dedicated it to them. And so they remember, but again, she, you know, you see her name, if you go through gospel songbooks from the 50s, you'll see her name time and time again as the arranger, but her story's been lost to time.
Yeah. Now, recently, Dr. Lou Della Evans passed away. Did you ever get a chance to sit with her?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, we became friends in the last several years. She just, you know, first of all, she was just so energetic and had such a great memory. And so, sitting with Reverend Lou Della Evans Reed was a treat. I would see her, I would see Vernon Oliver Price, I would see Loretta Oliver, would see them all sitting together at programs.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the all-star team right there. But yeah, when she passed, it was just really, really sad. Because she was like the Energizer Bunny. She could just go and go and go. But
yeah, it's so important to remember these names. And this is why I tell new artists, listen, just do quality work. It will get out there eventually, but don't worry about numbers and stuff like that. It's so many great people out here that haven't had the success. But I don't like to say that, because once you put out something, you are successful, period. Because it was a thought, then it became an action, and you completed the action. You are successful. Do not let the industry try to dictate, just because you didn't get an award or you didn't get any accolades, that you're not successful.
That's right.
All
That's
right.
Well said. I mean, absolutely well said, because you just don't know. I mean, with the Grammy nominations, you know, we didn't know whether we'd win or not. You just can't control that kind of thing. And yet people can get discouraged and say, well, I didn't win. But my goodness, if you try to dictate your career based on awards, you will be so disappointed.
That's the truth.
You know, it's very hard. And I know, I mean, James Cleveland used to say from the stage of the Gospel Music Workshop, some of the best singers aren't on the stage. They're sitting out there in the audience.
Mm.
It's just for luck that somebody got famous. There may be 10 people in the audience who could outsing them, but for whatever reason, they're not on the stage, and yet they're blessing people with what they're doing. So
that's right.
You're right. You
that's
cannot,
right.
yeah.
Yeah, no, and I tell people, it's so much talent out here. That's why we'll be around forever. There is, and especially when you're willing to do the work and you have an ear for talent, and when you see talent, you're like, oh my goodness, that was amazing. And you think about the stories that, you know, people say, Mariah Carey and other people who's like, oh, I gave them my demo and they turned me down, or they was like, no, no, no. And then they just blew to the stratosphere. So, mm-hmm. you know, you just have to do what you love. When you do what you love, then your gift will make room for you. You know, you
That's
just
exactly
do,
right. it's
do
exactly
what you
right.
love.
There's so many people who are, I mean, I can tell you, Nigeria, that I have met or spoken with artists who could blow anybody away off the stage
That's
today.
That's right, right.
But sometimes they're insecure or they're unsure of their talent. They're kind of afraid to step out. And so you say, well, you should do this, maybe do that. And they just, it's not, they're very scared. They're very nervous. And yet, you know, from hearing others that they could really do it.
Right.
It really takes them to just keep pushing at it and saying, don't be discouraged. Mahalia Jackson was once asked, how did she become so famous? And she said, I became famous through disappointment.
Mm.
It was just a sense of, you know, going through it, and you know, you get disappointments, and then you just keep moving. And so these artists just say, you may feel insecure, you may feel uncomfortable, but keep pressing because you've got something
right.
that can really make a difference. But it really, oftentimes, it just requires that they have a good manager or somebody who could really help them in areas where they may be uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, and it could just be fear. People want to be successful and wealthy and all of these things, but they don't want to do the work because of that keyword disappointment. And it's like once they get one no, they can't handle it, and then they just quit, you know. And you can't quit. You can't quit, you know.
That's true. Absolutely true. I mean, that's the thing. When somebody comes to me and says, I really want to be, I want to go into gospel music as a career, the first thing I say is, how serious are you?
Right.
Because there are many, you know,
yeah.
if you want to be, you know, a Jonathan McReynolds or a Doe, or you want to be a Kirk Franklin, there's a significant sacrifice that you're going to have to make. And like you said, disappointment, but also family, you know, just really on the, I mean, Jacqueline Carr is on the road so often. I mean, she's very famous, but she is constantly working. Or you could be a local star and have a nice
following
career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just be local, regional, and people love you here, and you don't have to. But if you want to be the big hit maker, it requires your time, and that means your time belongs to somebody else, and you may not want that.
Right, right. And that's the problem. People see the finished product, but they don't see the work that goes into putting a tour together. They don't see the work of, you know, rehearsals with the band and, you know, this one late, that one ain't come, you know what I'm saying? And they don't see all of that. You know, this one got a cold, that one's wife having a baby, you know, and you gotta have that kind of tenacity to keep going, you know, in spite of, and, you know, sometimes you gotta fire somebody and hire someone new. And then do you have the personality? You know, you hear the horror stories, people don't want to work with people, you know, but they need the money. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep working with them, but they're mean and they're nasty. And, you know, it's like, what is all of this about at the end of the day?
That's true. There was a conference one time where there was a panel, a gospel experts panel, and somebody said, you know, I said, you know, I do run into artists, and sometimes I'll say to them, he's like, I really like you as a person, I just don't like your music. And somebody else said, can it work in the opposite direction?
Yeah.
I love your music, but I don't like you.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So is just gospel music that you have such a passion for, or do you just listen to all genres? And
I do listen to all genres.
Okay.
I do listen to all genres, but gospel is my focus. Secondarily is music of Broadway.
Oh, okay.
And so there's a free streaming service called AccuRadio, and they have all different channels, all kinds of music. And I curate all the Broadway channels. So today, for a while as I was working. I was curating. We have a channel just dedicated to musicals that hit Broadway in the decade of 2000.
Oh, okay.
And so working on that, and then on a special channel just dedicated to the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber. Just finished a channel on the music dedicated to Stephen Sondheim. So I keep my foot in the door of Broadway. And then during Christmas holidays at our radio station, we have a lot of openings because people are gone. And so right. I'll do a show called Curtain Call, which is what I call the music of Broadway in Hollywood. So I'll do everything from, you know, Fred Astaire to Hamilton.
Okay.
And that show runs for about 4 weeks, and then it's over.
Right. Man, that's just amazing. And you are inducted in the Music Hall of Fame, right?
Oh, yeah, the Gospel Music Hall of Fame. Yeah. It's the lady in St. Louis that started this. Yeah, and she had inducted me, I think, the second year. And then they had a big one last year. So, yeah, it was very nice to be there at the event. And she took all great care of us. And I never would have put myself in the Hall of Fame. Right. You know, I sent so many other people, but so very, very lovely of her to do that. And she continues. I believe she's trying to renovate a church in St. Louis to become like a museum for gospel music.
Oh, man, I need to be upkept on that. That's, yeah. We need that. That's amazing.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah. You was on a television show with someone special, a documentary. Why don't you share that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, with Dr. Henry Louis Gates.
Yes.
It was a four-part PBS series on gospel music. It succeeded. He had done a show on the Black Church, and then
he wanted
to do one on the music. Yeah. And so, in fact, we went to Brooklyn to be interviewed for the show. Yeah, and it was great because it was a chance to really discuss the history of the music from its very beginnings, in generally in West Africa, really, if you want to go back that far, and then up to today. So my era was more the beginnings of the Chicago era, 1920s, 1930s, 1940s. But we all had an opportunity to answer all kinds of questions. So that was great. Never got a chance to meet Dr. Gates, but he had a wonderful staff. Had a wonderful staff in Brooklyn to interview us.
Oh wow! Okay, man, so much. Now I have to ask you, James Cleveland. Now I love me some James Cleveland, and I love me some Aretha Franklin, and her album is just an all-time classic. Amazing Grace. Let me ask you, is there another album better than Amazing Grace by Aretha Franklin?
I'd have to say no. I can give you probably a second most, but I would say she nailed it. I
mean, she killed
right
it
in there. Yeah. You know, she bridged that traditional and contemporary. I mean, brought back some of the old songs and sang them in her own style. And I love her version of How I Got Over, an old landmark.
Yeah.
And she just, you know, and I'm sure you saw the documentary,
the movie. Of course. I'm her number one fan. Yeah. That's my auntie. I love Aretha Franklin. I got every album, everything. Just, I seen her. I went to see her at Radio City Music Hall.
Oh.
And I was like third row in. And I was sitting there saying, I hope she sings Sparkle, you know. I just wanted her to sing that song because I love that song. I sparkle. Okay, I can't sing. But anyway, and oh my goodness, just before she left, I heard the music come on. And I'm the only, you know, Radio City is kind of conservative, so everybody's kind of calm. And I jump up and I'm like, yes, oh my God, Riri, sing it, you know. And my friend is like, oh my God. And she comes to my side. I was like, if I wasn't
awesome.
So far in, I would have ran to the stage, you know. But I was just grateful. I mean, I loved Aretha Franklin. I love me some Aretha Franklin. So tell me, who's the second best? I just want to know.
I'd say I would be partial to another Reverend James Cleveland album.
Okay.
But from 1960, Peace Be Still, 1963.
Okay.
And I guess I'm biased because I wrote a book about the album, but it's in the Grammy Hall of Fame. It was before Amazing Grace.
Okay.
That album was the biggest selling gospel album of all time before Amazing Grace. Then Amazing Grace took that over, and Kirk Franklin's first album might have even gone beyond that, but until Amazing Grace, Peace Be Still was it, and it was James Cleveland and the choir of the First Baptist Church in Nutley, New Jersey, with Reverend Lawrence Roberts, and a group, the Cleveland Singers, and then a woman named Jerry Griffin, who went on to become the lead singer for the Voices of East Harlem, which was back in the 70s, and she was on Broadway for a while in Hair. But when she was just, knee-high to a duck, she sang on that I Had a Talk with God Last Night, that then Mitty Collier turned into a soul song, I Had a Talk with My Man Last Night. Anyway, that album, but the interesting thing about that album was that Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace was bought by a multicultural audience.
Mm-hmm.
Peace Be Still was almost entirely a black church-going audience that bought that album.
Okay.
And it sold something like 50,000 copies a year. It once Amazing Grace came out, there was no comparison. That's the second. But here's something for you. You may know this about Aretha. James Cleveland actually wrote a love song for her.
No, I didn't know. What's the love song?
I was thinking of the name of it. I think it's on her first Columbia album.
Okay.
It's on her, and I want to say it's like Nobody But You or something like that is the title.
Okay.
Early on, it's this love song that he wrote. Not, I don't think he wrote it in love with her, but he wrote a love song for her to sing, and she sang it. I think it's like Nobody But You or something like that, and it's on her first album, and James Cleveland wrote it.
Wow. Now we talked about the old. What do you mentioned Jacqueline Carr and Jonathan McReynolds. What do you think about their sound and where gospel is today with all the genres, I love?
Yeah, it's interesting. Gospel music is today where it has always been, which is that it takes the sound of today and gives it a spiritual message. So to me, I mean, there's a lot of naysayers and say, gospel isn't any good anymore, blah, blah, blah. Well, gospel is exactly what it was when Thomas Dorsey sang, and he was doing blues and jazz, and people didn't like that. And then, the Winans came along, and they said, you're making this music sound too much like the club, and they didn't like it. So the church
always
had a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Clark sisters, you're wicked for singing, for the clubs. Well, but I think, interestingly enough, Jonathan McReynolds, I'll take him for an example, he brought a more delicate style into gospel music. At a time when the sound was really over the top, and then here's this guy with a guitar coming in
and playing
these really soft songs. Same with Doe or Dominique Jones from Forever Jones. These very tender love. Yeah, they're changing things in a way. I would say like maybe Roberta Martin did in the 30s, where she took the songs and said, it's great to have up-tempo and clapping, but maybe we just need to have some hymns that are really kind of nice and beautiful and have the gospel feel. So, I think they're kind of doing the same thing. However, I will say gospel needs a huge superstar. We need a Aretha Franklin.
Right.
We need a James Cleveland, because the music has sort of stayed kind of mainstream for a while, and there's wonderful artists like Jacqueline Carr and Jonathan McReynolds and Brian Courtney Wilson and, BBCC Wine, all of them are in there. But I think somebody needs to shake it up. And we need it like the Winans shook up the music, like Andre Crouch and the Hawkins shook up the music.
Yes.
Somebody needs to shake up the music in a way that's probably going to offend some people at first, but ultimately will take the music into, more successful direction. So I don't know who that is, but I'm sure they're singing at a church right now.
Yeah, right. Now, as Bob and I have encouraged your heart, hopefully that you will not be afraid. You will throw your hat in the ring. Don't worry about the no's. you know, just keep, just use your gift. Use your gift wisely.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I get a little slack for playing gospel house, and it's like, I don't care. I'm an ex-club girl. When I'm cleaning my house or exercising, I don't want to hear Mahalia, although I love Mahalia. I want to hear something more upbeat that I can dance to. I want to dance. I'm not going to dance to Cardi B or none of them. So I need something. Right. So I'm telling you, I absolutely love and salute to all the artists that stepped out and, you know, did gospel hip hop, Christian hip hop music, who does jazz, who just did what, you know, their hearts felt like doing or God called them to do. Because I'm telling you, I appreciate it all. You know, reggae, gospel, I absolutely love it all. You know, and that's why we say we play the most diverse gospel online, period. Because whatever mood I'm in, if I want to hear reggae, if I want to hear Afro beats, if I want to hear, I'm just glad that they do it so I don't have to be subjected to the secular versions where I might have to hear some words I don't want to hear, you know?
That's right. And that's been some of the tension, I think, in gospel has been some of the collaborations. Mm-hmm. And again, this tension is not old, is not new. You know, there have been tensions over this for a long, long, long time. But when I think Nicki Minaj was on Tasha Cobbs Leonard's album, people gave her guff about that, said, you know, why are you bringing her on here? Glorilla was the latest one. I forget whose songs. And people were saying, oh, you know, Glorilla, you shouldn't have. And the person finally had to say, do you know where Glorilla learned to sing in church? They said, but her voice got kind of raggedy to where she couldn't sing gospel, so she chose rap. Uh-huh. They said, you know, but she has a church heart. So there's some of that going on. I do think that it's important that there is a variety because music brings, I mean, they always say music brings people in the church, the sermons keep them there. So if there's a way to give, if somebody wants to hear a spiritual message, why not go to them? Why not, like the Christian hip hop artists, who I contend to be some of the most genuinely spiritual people you'll ever meet, Lecrae and Trip Lee and all them, they just really have it where they know and they're very passionate about what they do.
That's right.
If their message relates to somebody who needs that message, who might otherwise get their, you know, get their philosophy from Drake or somebody else, which is fine, but why not gospel have a way for somebody to get their message? Hip hop, it's through house, that's fine. That's where the message should go.
Yeah. The point is getting the message out, you know, and just being able to reach another audience. You know, the church has to expand. And then it's horrible when the church is listening to secular music when you don't have to because you're so judgmental about the gospel artist's music. It don't make no sense.
Yep.
Like you don't have to. You just want to. You know, you don't have to. There's an artist out there who is singing that genre, and can you imagine if the church embraced it? Gospel artists are going platinum and getting on the stages and receiving the Grammys and stuff like that. You know, not that all are doing it for it, but how do we have 10,000, 5,000 members in churches around the world and gospel artists are struggling still?
Yeah, and that is true. I mean, it's still very much a pinch penny world. The artists who have been successful, I believe they have invested in other things. You know, they like Kirk Franklin has other investments. So you cannot live on your music alone, even if you're a top star.
Right.
It's very difficult. So it's still a tough thing to get into. You do have to do it for the ministry aspect of it. If you just do it to get on the red carpets and all that, it's probably not going to be successful because, number one, you really have to have the passion to do it. Number two, an audience, I've always said, a gospel audience can really tell when somebody's being inauthentic. And they might be polite and just clap and, you know, but you know when somebody gets up there and they're just not it's not happening.
That's true. That is really true. You like,
it's not like the Apollo. They're not going to boo you,
right?
But they're going to just sit there politely, clap,
right?
And then just the next look person at you comes up eye. And they're anointed,
right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, there is a difference. Like Miranda Curtis, there's mm-hmm. songs she sang that can bring tears to my eyes. The anointing that's on her voice. I don't know her personal life, but I can tell you she can sing now. She can sing a song, you know. And, you know, that's just the blessing.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I finished. I was like, that's just the blessing when someone's so anointed to sing. You know, and it just puts chills down your spine. You just like, oh my goodness.
Well, the person that, like we mentioned, Ja'Kalyn Carr. If you speak with Ja'Kalyn, she's very quiet, very friendly, very polite, very doesn't expend a lot of energy. But she gets up in front of an audience, and it is like it's a different person up there.
Yes, yes,
and
do know
she just
her.
She can just turn it on, and you realize that's what she's been conserving her energy for, because she puts it into that. Zacardi Cortez is another one. They just have this ability to move audiences, and that's, you know, you either have it or you don't in gospel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. Ja'Kalyn Carr is a key player. She's been on the show. She actually, you know, so I'm going to put her on blast real quick. When I interviewed her, I was like, I feel so intimidated by your voice. I feel like you should do radio. And she chuckled, you know. Next thing I knew, she was doing radio. Did she say thank you, Nigeria? You know, did I get a shout out? No. All right, I'm just sharing. But she's definitely another gift to the body that's out there.
Yeah, and there, and there are always new ones, but you know, right now, as you had said earlier, it's you've got to be able to do it for the love of it, because there are a lot of singers out there, but record companies such that they are slow to bring in new people. Very, very careful. You've got to have huge social media following to begin with. So you got to just find your lane and work it and hope and pray that, you know, this is what you do will fill you and others. And if the fame and fortune comes, so be it, but not to expect it.
Right. Well, you know, I'm sad in that they look at numbers, because I've seen people who have millions of followers and, you know, they put out, they had a concert and I went personally, and if there were 10 or 20 people there, and I'm still exaggerating, I was mm-hmm. like, wow, you know, and, so it can mean something, and then it can mean nothing, having millions of followers. You know, I always say, if you got all these millions of followers, why are you begging, like, please buy my album, you know?
That's very, very true.
You know,
and you know, I think, you know, it behind every artist should be somebody with just the super confidence of making sure that they get out there, but that they're not taken advantage of.
Right.
That, that they don't try to put out one single every month, because then it gets crowded. But just to make sure that they are doing the right things, taking care of themselves throughout the whole process, physically, spiritually, mentally. Because as you said, there is the business aspect of it. Not right. everybody who is Christian will act Christian.
Right.
So you're going to have issues come up. You have to fight them off. But ultimately, you just have to stay the path and do what you think you need to do, because otherwise you may just have a very short career, or you may just get discouraged and stop. And I know people have done that.
Right.
They just said, this isn't for me. And they quit. And maybe they quit too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's a word right there. Maybe they quit too soon. Well, mm-hmm. man. Well, Bob, we can go on and on, but I thank you for coming through and joining the family. And, you know, like we say, once a key player, always a key player. So keep us in the loop and allow us to be one of your media partners, even though you're media. And this is what I love. Like, there's no competition. We do the same thing. It's okay. Yeah. We're going to talk after this, but, you know, you got to partner up with people. It's not Everybody tries to do their own thing. It's like, what is happening?
I always say it's like radio broadcast. There's room enough for everyone.
Yeah.
There's always room
absolutely.
Enough for everyone. And you're absolutely. Right. You know, better that we collaborate than compete.
Exactly. So let everybody know your social media tab. They can reach out to you and listen to his radio show. I listened to the last 6 sets you had on there, and I was like, man, I love how you go all the way back, come all the way up, chop in the middle, and, you know, mm-hmm. just it's a beautiful blend. So, you know, definitely I want to support that. So let people know how they can reach out.
Yes, you can reach out to me through the website, journalofgospelmusic.com. On that website is the link to Gospel Memories, which airs live here in Chicago every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 a.m., but you can live stream it at wluw.org. And then also you can reach to me and my Facebook. I'm Journal of Gospel Music has a Facebook page. And Bob Maravich, myself, I have a Facebook page, so you can reach out to me that way as well. And in my email and all the details, so if you're an artist who wants to submit a project for review consideration, if you go to the journalofgospelmusic.com, all that information is there to send a music for review.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you. And let's keep gospel music alive.
We'll do that. Nigeria, thank you so much for inviting me to speak with you. I've really enjoyed our conversation. It's great.
Thank you. You're more than welcome.